This podcast is brought to you by Holman Contracting Group in Tuscaloosa. Holman Contracting Group is your go-to company for roofing, remodeling, and new construction homes. You can make your dream home a reality. Give them a call at 205-523-7088. You can also contact them at holmancontractors.com. That's HolmanContractors.com. Or on Facebook. Phone number is 205-523-7088. Welcome back to the Bama Beat. I'm Ben Jones here with Cecil Hurt today. Cecil, Alabama has a basketball coach.
They do, since our last podcast.
Yeah. We only did one podcast where Alabama didn't have a basketball coach.
Really?
Yeah. It was quick. It was Saturday night when you and a few others reported that Alabama was in negotiations to buy out Avery Johnson from his contract. Sunday, Alabama made it official with a news release. Monday, Greg Byrne held a press conference talking about his coaching search. And Wednesday afternoon, Alabama announced its new coach.
Breaking news.
Yeah. Thursday afternoon, Tide, coach is here.
Breaking news on TideSports.com for everybody to go over there and look. So, yeah, I had thought Greg would move quickly. I hope at some point in the one podcast that we did do, I hope I indicated that I did.
Yeah. We did have Nate Oates listed among the coaching candidates we thought Alabama would consider, though he wasn't necessarily at the top of the list. Some of the guys like Steve Prom and Thad Matta, whom there was probably a little bit more speculation about. He was one of the mid-major candidates who had a strong resume, some good coaching chops, and had performed well at his current job, but always feels a little bit like you're taking a risk or a roll of the dice when you hire a mid-major candidate, perhaps like Anthony Grant two coaching searches ago.
Mid-major roulette.
That's what you referred to it as in your column.
Also, he had signed his contract extension with Buffalo. They were eliminated in the second round by Texas Tech, and almost immediately Buffalo signed him to an extension, and I think a lot of people indicated that at least for a year that sort of took him off the market, and didn't indicate that to Greg Byrne, obviously. But
I think his buyout was prohibitively high.
$750,000.
Yeah, which isn't something to sneeze at, but if you're Alabama and you're expecting to pay your next coach somewhere in the range of $2.5 million, $3 million, $3.5 million, I would say it's probably in there. We don't have the official numbers at this point, although Alabama will release his contract at some point soon. Paying in the $700,000 range to get a coach out of his contract is not prohibitive.
Yeah, I don't think there's a coach in the SEC that's making less than $2 million a year.
So. Yeah, and his extension with Buffalo was going to pay him in the high 800 range.
Right, but I would think Alabama would 2.5, 3.
Yeah,
we'd have no problem with that.
We just came back from the press conference for Nate Oates. Press conferences are always a little bit difficult to judge. I think there's some sampling bias with any press conference because at this point, all we really know about Nate Oates as Alabama's coach is how he did at the press conference. We don't have any way to judge him on recruiting yet. We don't have any games to judge him on yet. All we have is a press conference to judge him on, and so I think folks can sometimes put too much importance on that. But just your first impressions overall.
Well, I thought he was prepared. I thought he was straightforward in his answers. You can win a press conference in a couple of ways. You know, you can be funny and have funny stories and so forth, or you can just seem ultra competent. And I thought he seemed ultra competent and confident, also in himself. You can guide a press conference sort of the way that you want it to go if you're good at it. He certainly didn't seem nervous or microphone shy.
I thought he seemed a little bit nervous, but not to the point where he was uncomfortable, just to the point where he'd probably never been in a situation quite like that before. I'd assume when he was introduced at Buffalo, there was not quite that much fanfare around.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
And despite being on the stage of the NCAA tournament, he's probably not the guy who's getting all the attention when you're there at the podium.
No, I mean, there's certainly more reporters than were there today, but they're you're at a regional, they're talking to all eight coaches. And
yeah, it's a different environment.
It's a different thing.
Yeah.
If you're Buffalo, they're generally not so much Buffalo this year because they were a 6 seed. You know, they're a prominent team. But a lot of times if you're the mid-major at the NCAA tournament, you're just getting asked about the other team anyway. Well, what do you think about Duke?
Yeah.
What do you think about Zion?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. We're going to have to circle back at some point more than 30 minutes after we walked out of the press conference and talk a little bit more about this hire, talk a little bit more about his coaching staff and kind of the start of the Nate Oates era, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. But for now, we can talk about some of the questions that came up at the press conference, what he said, what we think that he means, what we know at this point. He was asked about putting his coaching staff together and was actually probably more forthcoming about that than most head coaches would be at their press conference. Didn't say something along the lines of, we're not ready to announce that. Said he hopes to bring Brian Hodgson. I hope I didn't butcher that name too badly.
I think it's right.
From Buffalo, one of his assistants. Said he's met with all three of Alabama's current assistants. Said he doesn't anticipate keeping all three of them. Obviously, that was would be kind of unprecedented and wouldn't just make a lot of sense unless you had a very strange situation with the head coach. But did indicate that he would be open to keeping one of them. Also said that he thinks that it will probably be important to have at least one coach on his staff who is familiar with the Southeast and will be able to recruit that region, which perhaps could end up being the assistant coach on Alabama's staff that he's referring to considering keeping.
One thing to remember, and I certainly don't know what lists are in his pocket. Not only is there a Buffalo staff and an Alabama staff, but he also, I would think, simply in the course of events, a magic wand has been waved, and if he's got a guy out there that he had said, boy, I'd love to hire him as an assistant, but I just can't pay him at Buffalo.
Yeah.
Now he can pay him.
Yeah. Said that he might be considering another one of his assistant coaches from Buffalo. Mm-hmm. I believe the other one is the interim head coach at this point. And so that whether he's able to hire Hodgson or the other coach would be pending whether one of those coaches is hired as Buffalo's head coach.
Yeah, I think that may be a DBO position.
Okay.
I think it's administrative.
That's why we have
director
Cecil
of basketball operations that he won, which almost inevitably head coaches have, and if they trust the guy, they bring him.
Yeah,
he's kind of their right-hand administrative guy.
Yeah, one thing that came up as we spoke with both Greg Byrne and again when we spoke with Nate Oates, he doesn't have any experience in the Southeast. He has been a head coach at Buffalo for 4 years. He was an assistant coach at Buffalo for 2 years before that, and before that, he was a high school head coach in Michigan for 11 years, who was very highly regarded. Greg Byrne said that he spoke with Tom Izzo, who knew Oates going back to his days as a high school coach in the state, but has never really recruited down in this area, is perhaps not based in this part of the country. How significant of a factor do you think that will be, especially perhaps in the first few years as he kind of gets things going here?
Well, as you said, Greg said on Monday that geographic footprint wasn't important to him. I think you have to have some connection.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not asking whether it's important to Greg Byrne. I'm asking whether it should be consideration here.
Yeah. I think you have to have some. The head coach doesn't necessarily have to have been born in the Tri-County area, you know, but I think somebody on your staff has to have some experience with the Southeastern Conference and with the region and with the ways that you recruit here, you know, in terms of some of the schools are rural, some of them are smaller, some of them, it's not just all big city kids and so forth. So he'll learn that quickly. In some ways, recruiting is recruiting. In other ways, there are differences in the Midwest and the Pacific Coast and the Southeast. But I think it would be a benefit for him to have somebody with that sort of knowledge available to him and to help him with that. And he seems to be a quick learner. I think that Hodgson, if I remember correctly, has been in Texas Junior College prior to going to Buffalo.
I believe that's correct.
I think he was at Odessa. Yeah. And so there's a little bit, you know, that you're going to encounter and recruit some Southern kids there.
Yeah.
So that would be a little bit. But I still think there's some value in having somebody with some sort of SEC background.
Yeah. Greg Byrne's point when he was asked this question, he said that you can find coaches who are successful who don't have any geographic ties to the area. He pointed out, you know, Nick Saban, when Saban arrived at LSU, did not have any ties to the Southeast. He'd been mainly in Ohio and Michigan, either as an NFL assistant. He was in Houston briefly, but also had been, you know, coaching college in Ohio and Michigan. If you want to look at some basketball comparisons, perhaps, at the far ends of the spectrum, you could point out that Billy Donovan, when he was hired at Florida from a mid-major, Marshall, didn't have much experience in the Southeast. He'd been an assistant at Kentucky, although you recruit very differently at Kentucky than you would recruit at Florida, obviously.
When Bruce Pearl was hired at Tennessee, he had basically been a Midwestern guy.
Yeah, Wisconsin and Indiana.
Southern Indiana. Yeah. And, of course, had played at Boston College. So.
Mm-hmm. On the other end of the spectrum, you could also point at a guy like Mark Fox, who went to Georgia from Nevada. And I'm not sure whether he ever really felt like he had a foundation there at Georgia. He had ended up with some good recruits and was able to make a couple of NCAA tournaments, but don't know that things translated quite so well for him there.
Yeah, but Tom Crean's gone in there and seems to have made the transition pretty easily, despite having been most of his time at Marquette in Indiana. So.
Yeah, year one for him, right?
Yeah.
So. Now that we've kind of segued into the discussion about recruiting, one thing that I thought was interesting did not come up, actually. Buffalo spent a lot of time recruiting junior college players. I believe three of the Bulls' starters this season were junior college players. I wonder if he will continue to mine junior colleges as heavily here, either initially or in the long term, and whether that's a viable strategy at a Southeastern Conference school, or if you need to be able to get higher caliber high school players and develop them.
I think the situation is that you can get higher caliber high school players, mm-hmm. and you will concentrate on that first for obvious reasons. 4 years rather than two, for one thing. So I don't know that you necessarily feel like that in order to be athletically competitive, you have to spend as much time in the junior college ranks mm-hmm. as Buffalo did. But at the same time, I think that as you recruit for need, I think that he will definitely keep that avenue open, particularly here, probably in the first year or two.
I was going to point that out. Depending on how the transfer portal works out, Alabama currently has four players who have eligibility left who are in the transfer portal at the moment. That's Dazon Ingram, Daniel Giddens, who are both graduate transfers eligible immediately, then Kyra Lewis Jr. and John Petty both went in. Was it yesterday? On Wednesday?
Did John go the day before? I can't remember.
I think so, yeah. They were all very recent since we recorded our basketball podcast on Monday for you guys.
Right.
And if you need to replace some of those guys right away, if you end up losing some of those guys that you don't want to lose, then you have, at the moment, four returning players who played the season, two returning guys who were redshirts during the season. You have three incoming signees
The only one of the signees that I've actually heard from is Jalen Forbes from Mississippi, who indicated that he still wants to come to Alabama.
Yeah. So at that point, you have the potential. Obviously, a lot of things are still in flux, but there's the potential for Alabama to only have, you know, 9 or 10 or 11 scholarship guys, depending on how things shake out at this point. So you may need to go and add a body here kind of late that's not going to throw you out of whack for the next 4 years, perhaps.
That happens with a coaching change.
Yeah.
It's funny how on one side of the coin, people are like, oh my gosh, the roster attrition is going to be terrible, and then on the other side of the coin, Nick Saban had plenty of roster attrition in his first 2 years, and everybody was like, he's oversigning, you know, he's running kids off. So what do you do?
Yeah, you know, Nate Oates made the point, as we were speaking with him, that maybe some of the players who are in the transfer portal would be better off doing that. Seemed to be a pretty good indication to me that he does not expect all four of them back at Alabama next year.
No. That's what it sounded like to me. Said maybe some of them in the transfer portal should be in the transfer portal.
Yeah, and I don't think we're breaking news to tell you guys here that the graduate transfers are probably the more likely.
Yeah, first of all, they don't have to deal with a waiver and all of that.
If they find a better situation, they don't have to worry. They can just go.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to be playing for a new guy one way or the other.
Yeah.
Just what the jersey is.
Yeah.
And if that's what they choose to do, good guys, you know, Dejon put in 4 years and graduated, and if he chooses not to come back for a fifth year, good for him. Same for Daniel, really good guy. Well-spoken guy that earned his degree. And, you know, if he's looking for more playing time, then it might be just based on style of play, the situation where he could find something else. Yeah. So, but
on the other hand, he did say that he spoke with Kyra Lewis Jr. this morning and said he's going to do everything that he can to make sure that Kyra Lewis stays wearing an Alabama uniform.
Yeah, said he had spoken with Kyra and with Herb Jones, some of which was, not to the exclusion of anybody else. He said it's based on class schedules. Although I think wouldn't have mattered what Kyra's class schedule was necessarily. Yeah. I think he was going to get approached regardless.
Yeah. You were a top 25 voter in the college basketball poll this season. How much did you get to watch Buffalo?
A good bit.
Your impressions of the team and its style of play generally?
Yeah, very up-tempo, very, very much emphasis on ball movement, pressure defense. Probably statistically, I'm not a huge stat motorhead, but they led the country in transition points. Alabama did not lead the country in transition points allowed, although it seemed that way sometimes.
Yeah.
So they'll play up tempo. You got to do what your personnel will let you do, but I think he will recruit to and be committed to an up tempo style and not a full court 40 minute of hell press, but certainly ball pressure defensively.
Yeah. Greg Byrne mentioned that Nate Oates has been a guy he's been aware of for a while. I would assume that this time last year when Alabama was coming off of its NCAA tournament appearance with Colin Sexton, Greg wasn't actively scouting coaching candidates, but you always keep an idea of who's out there and who you might be interested in if circumstances change. Said that he'd noticed watching Buffalo play and said that the players for Buffalo played like their hair was on fire on both ends of the court. I would assume he had watched Buffalo upset Arizona, where Greg Byrne had come from as athletic director, in that game in the NCAA tournament last year.
I would suspect that would be the case. I don't imagine that Greg sat down and watched a whole lot more action than anybody else did. But you see guys in the NCAA, and you're aware of them. And they were ranked all year, so that does raise your profile a little bit. Get you on SportsCenter.
This year was kind of different for Buffalo than what last year was. Last year, they were
different from most mid-major experiences.
Yeah. They were in the tournament last year, I think, as was it a 14?
Right,
Arizona was a three. Yeah, it was a big upset in the first round, maybe a little bit overshadowed by Virginia, but it was a big deal. DeAndre Ayton had been the first-round draft pick. This year in the tournament, Buffalo was the sixth seed.
Right.
He beat Arizona State, which had Bobby Hurley, his former head coach at Buffalo, but that wasn't an upset.
Arizona State
was the 11th seed.
Right, and it come out of Dayton.
Yeah.
So, it wasn't an upset, and really, although most of the bracket is pretty chalky anyway. He got a tough three seed in Texas Tech.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Anything else that we should discuss here? I know you and I both have a fair bit of work to get to this afternoon. We got to make a newspaper for tomorrow, which will probably have Nate Oates' face on the front of it.
Possibly. I thought he said things that Alabama fans will like to hear without consciously trying to say things, guess at what they wanted to hear. I think he said what he said. I think that it will go over, much of it will go over well. I don't think it was just they want to hear we're going to play up tempo. And all coaches come in there and say it, but I didn't gather from him that it was a designed message. So he's got to recruit. He's got to get a roster set. He said he had watched some, he told us in the breakout session that he had watched some Alabama games, obviously a cram course, while he was in the 24 hours or so that he was contemplating the job. He did not give us specific individual scouting reports on each player, but he seemed to indicate that he thought there was some potential there and will go forward and see what happens. It'll be quiet. You just don't have a lot of media opportunity for the next month or so. If we're in Destin, he'll be in Destin.
Right.
And I assume we'll be in Destin. So somebody will get down there.
Yeah.
So may not hear from him until then, except for opportunities here and there because he's going to be recruiting and building a team.
Yeah.
He also did say, the one thing I'll say is that they're allowed to spend a certain amount of time in the off season working with players, skills development, and so forth. But he also said that if that's all the time that the players put in the off season, that they're not going to be any good. And
this is the case for pretty much every division of sport.
But he's obviously going to expect weight room time, player practice, player-led practice sessions or scrimmage sessions, and probably a pretty healthy hour per week workload.
Yeah. Okay. We've got to get going the rest of our day here. Cecil, thanks for coming in.
Sure. Glad to do it.
Be sure to check on TideSports.com for all of our coverage about this, and we'll be back to talk about basketball at some point, I'm sure, after things are more than 30 minutes removed from the press conference. So thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks.
Hey, guys, this is Ben Jones. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, please give us a rating or a review on iTunes. We really appreciate all your guys' support. I know every podcast you guys listen to, they probably ask you all to leave a rating or a review or both. They do that because that helps other people find the podcast. The more subscribers that we have, the more ratings that we have, the more reviews that we have, the more people will listen to the podcast, the higher up it ranks us in the algorithms. So if you're listening to this, and you have a couple extra minutes, we'd really appreciate it if you could just go ahead and do that. Thanks.